Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning and welcome to this episode of Step Into the Light. I'm your host, Patty Sheen. Thank you for listening. On this show, we introduce listeners to people who have found their way out of the dark shadows of life and back to light, and those who, through various ministries and creative endeavors, lead others on their journey from darkness to light. November is National Adoption Awareness Month. Approximately 135,000 children are adopted in the United States annually. Adoption, which used to carry a stigma and an atmosphere of secrecy, has changed in many ways over the years to match the changing shape of our society. Many adopted children come from the foster care system, and international adoption has become more common over the last decades. What are the pros and cons of adoption? What are the steps prospective adoptive parents should take? What is the purpose and function of the foster care system? Should the church play a role in the lives of adoptive and foster care families? My guest today, Katie Cruz Smith, is a freelance writer, journalist, and editor who resides in the upstate of South Carolina with her husband and her three adopted children. Katie is an adoption and foster care advocate, and she and her husband are licensed foster care parents and also the founders of their church's orphan ministry. As an author, Katie has written and published a delightful children's book entitled Why Did You Choose Me?, which addresses the question often asked by adopted children of their adoptive parents. She is also currently working on a devotional book to accompany Why Did You Choose Me? Good morning, Katie, and welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me here.
Well, it's a delight to have you, Katie. We've had a little bit of mishaps as far as trying to get organized with technology and so such, but it's wonderful to finally have you on the show. Well, Katie, I'd like to ask you, I usually start out my interviews by asking my guests, you've come from a certain point in childhood to adulthood. So what childhood experiences would you say contributed to the various choices that you have made as an adult?
Well, I think, you know, I'm the middle child. Well, I'm the middle girl of four kids. And I think that I just grew up with middle child syndrome, you know, feeling left out, feeling, you know, unloved, like I didn't fit in. I think a lot of middle kids can relate. And I'm also a pastor's daughter and a nurse's daughter. And you know, even though I felt like that, they obviously loved me very much. And
sure.
They both work in fields where they sacrifice a lot, and they have a lot of compassion to meet other people's needs. And so I think that they taught me, you know, how to care for others and how to look for ways to minister in unique ways. And I think that those were some key things in teaching me, you know, that I needed to be compassionate as an adult as well.
Well, that makes sense, Katie, and it's interesting that you talk about the fact that you're a, what they call a PK, a pastor's kid, right?
Yeah.
And also
yes.
The daughter of a nurse, because both of those professions are very nurturing professions. And
right.
I can see where the children might feel like, gee, mom and dad are giving all their love and energy to everybody else. What about us? And it's not really that way, but I think it's just the way that kids perceive their environment and their home.
Yes, indeed. And you know, even but being a pastor's kid gave me opportunities to minister, because my dad would obviously take us along with him sometimes to minister
sure.
to people, and we were very involved with church. And it was in my church that I first came across a family who was in the ministry of caring for children. They were house parents, and I was friends with the boys who lived in their home, and there was never any confusion about, you know, these were their kids. It wasn't these are the foster kids and these are their biological children. They were all part of their family, and I always just wanted to have that ministry because of this family that I saw growing up.
Wow, how neat that is. What an impact that made on you as a young person, huh?
Oh yes, very much.
Very nice. And I think, too, when young people, children are exposed to situations like you said you were with your dad, that it gives kids an entirely different perspective. It helps them see how other people live, that not everybody has maybe some of the perks that we have. We come to realize that there are people who do struggle to put food on the table and do struggle to have decent clothing and things like that. And I think if kids aren't exposed to that experience, that they can become very self-absorbed and very self-centered.
Right.
Well, Katie, adoption is a very important part of your life, not only as the fact that you are an adoptive parent, but the fact that you are an advocate for adoption. So I'd like to ask you some questions about that. First of all, should parents adopt, do you feel, of course this is just an opinion question, even if they have their own children?
Absolutely believe that any family should adopt, whether they have biological children, whether they are just starting out. You know, the more children you have, the more love you have. God has given us these children here on earth to care for. They can't take care of themselves. And he says over and over and over again in scripture that we are to care for the orphans. And so he doesn't say only care for them if you just got married and you don't have any kids of your biologically. You know, he says love them, take them in. And in Bible times, you don't see a lot of foster care or adoption because it was naturally a part of the community. And people already did that. They took in those orphans and cared for them as part of their family. And the children who walked alongside of them considered them brothers and sisters over and over again.
That's an excellent point, Katie. I never thought about that, but you're right. That's very interesting observation.
Oh, yes. I've studied a lot about this.
Do you foresee for parents who do adopt into a family where they already have biological children, have you encountered where there are problems, maybe jealousy issues of you're my adopted kid and this one is my real, not so much from the parents, but from the kids themselves?
There can be. I think that children of all ages, teenagers or down to infants, can struggle with change. And I think that it's important that the parents are providing stability in the home. Don't, you know, even if a child comes in through natural pregnancy, there's still jealousy there. There's still, oh, I'm no longer the only child. I'm no longer the baby of the family. You know, there's another person there taking mom and dad's attention. So it's important for parents to be very sensitive to the kids' feelings. You know, don't undermine what they're feeling. Continue to do special activities with them. Let them help prepare the home for a new addition. Let them have an opinion about, you know, the color of the nursery or let them buy a gift for the new kid coming in, or, you know, really listen to them and make sure you spend one-on-one time with them and keep them as a priority. They are still important. And I think it's important. One thing is to respect birth order. If you have a child I have a 9-year-old, so we don't foster or adopt children who are older than her, because it's very important for her to be the oldest. But
oh, wow,
that's
an excellent point too, Katie. Yeah.
Yeah, and she loves that. She loves being the eldest in the house. And when the kids come in, she loves being the one who shows them, hey, this is how things are done in this house. But for my 4-year-old, she could care less if another 4-year-old comes in or if a 6-year-old comes in. She just loves that there's another kid in the house. So I think you just need to respect your child's feelings and really tune into them, because what they think and feel matters.
Yes, absolutely. I really like that concept, Katie. That's an excellent point. Well, in this modern day of technology and all, it's wonderful in its way, but it also has its drawbacks. And unfortunately, one of those drawbacks is scams. So how can a prospective adoptive parent know that they are working with a reputable adoption agency? Because we do hear horror stories about babies that are trafficked and things like this. And you come to find out that you have a child who, you know, who has been stolen from another country or trafficked in or kidnapped or heaven knows what. So how do you know? How does a prospective adoptive family know who they're dealing with, Katie?
Well, I think that those situations are not as common as the media will make us believe. Those are the dramatic stories. Yeah.
Well,
don't believe the movies on adoption. Most adoption stories are really good stories. And there are so many wonderful adoption agencies out there, and it's really easy to research them beforehand. You know, talk to other adoptive families. Join adoption Facebook groups in your area. I value the ladies in my adoption group, and I haven't met, I think I only know two of them in person, but the rest of them have become very valuable to me. And, you know, just start asking around about how they adopted and what were their experiences. And, you know, when you look for an adoption agency, come prepared with a lot of questions. And if they don't know the answers or they're putting you off, then move on. There are so many other adoption agencies out there. Go somewhere else where they can answer your questions. And ask them ahead of time about their fees. Get a detailed list. A sound, reputable adoption agency will have a detailed list, because these are questions other adoptive families have asked. And compare them to other agencies. See if there's something that sets a red flag. You know, if something about the adoption seems off, or it seems like they're trying to cut a lot of fees, then you need to be asking whether this is really a reputable agency. You know, but really just doing your research. You know, there are just so many valuable resources in other adoptive families. You know, if you if you're adopting from another country, find a group that adopts from that country and find out what their experience was, because especially when you're doing an international adoption, there can be some things, some obstacles to look out for, and some agencies may not follow all the proper protocol. So you want to talk to families who've been there.
Yes, and that leads me into another question that I had. What kind of steps do parents need to take for international adoption procedures versus domestic adoption? Is there quite a difference in the whole process, Katie?
There is. There's a lot more when you're adopting internationally. There's a pact out there, I guess that's what it's called. It's the Hague Treaty, where there are certain countries that work with the United States. And so there are rules and regulations, obviously, for each country. Some countries are very easy to adopt from, you know, and you just have to go and you get matched with a child and you come home. But most of the countries have certain age requirements. They have certain, you know, financial requirements. We tried adopting from China when we first started our adoption journey, and I was only 28 at the time. And their requirement was that you had to be 30 to even start the paperwork.
And really? So how interesting.
Yes. Each country has, you know, their own rules and regulations in addition to whatever they've agreed to with the United States. And some countries require 1 to 3 visits before allowing you to take your children home. So you need to be prepared. Is this something, you know, our neighbors ended up staying in their children's country for over a year before they could bring their children there. They started out trying to adopt one and ended up bringing her brother home too, because they were there for so long.
What a neat story, though.
Yes, and you know, it worked out for them, but they had to take some time off of work. So you need to be prepared. Is this a country where I can go and stay for a while? Can I afford traveling? You know, that costs a lot. And a lot of people will donate air miles to adoptive families because they feel like that's a way that they can participate in adoption. So don't be afraid to ask, you know, does anybody have any air miles to donate? Does anybody have hotel points that I can use? Because you're staying in that country, you know.
Right.
And then we have some friends who are adopting from Kyrgyzstan right now, and they've been waiting over 2 years to just be matched with a child. They're still not matched, and they just had their third home study. So you have to know, like, ahead of time, how long are you willing to wait? If you want an infant, then you may want to think about adopting domestically, because you're more likely to get an infant. Because by the time you are matched with a child in another country. It might be 2 or 3 years down the road, and the child you're matched with is a toddler or older. So you
exactly.
need to think about all these things. There's over 130 million children in the world available for adoption. They need a forever family. So whatever way you choose to adopt is the right way. There's no wrong way to adopt.
Goodness, what an overwhelming number that is, though, to think about, huh?
It is.
130 million
it.
Children without families.
And
wow.
we can solve that. We can change that. But one child at a time. If
mm-hmm.
you can bring one child home, then you've reduced that number by one.
Yeah,
and
that's
true.
It's
amazing. And it'll change your life, and it'll change that child's life.
Mm-hmm. It's like the story of throwing the starfish back into the ocean, huh? It matters
oh, yeah.
to that one.
That's right. And God calls us to be faithful, to do what he calls us to do. And so he says, you know, I've given you much. The United States is a very wealthy country. We have the means to take care of the orphan crisis. So but we need to step up, and we need
yeah.
to be willing to say, I'm going to skip my vacation this year, and I'm going to go to Kyrgyzstan, and I'm going to adopt a child from Kyrgyzstan, or I'm going to help a family adopt a child from Kyrgyzstan. You know, there are ways that you can be involved. Even if you can't open your home to a child, you can still be a part of the adoption process.
Yes. Well, Katie, you touched on air miles and hotel miles and things like that, but even for domestic adoptions, and I have no idea, I'm asking, isn't there quite a bit of fees and quite a bit of expense involved? And
well,
if there is there funding available to help adoptive parents with the expense? It was my question.
Yes, there absolutely is. Adoption can be overwhelming to people. A lot of people say to me, I would love to adopt, but I could never afford it. But
mm-hmm.
my husband and I aren't wealthy either. We have a small income, but we answered God's call. And we simply
yes.
did our research. For international adoptions, I will say that there are way more grants available. Show Hope is a huge organization started by Stephen Curtis Chapman, and they sponsor international adoptions, but only international adoptions.
Uh-huh.
But they give quite large amounts of money to helping families bring their children home. Life Song for Orphans is another one that helps. Some agencies like American World Adoption have grants that are available for specific children. So if you're willing to adopt that certain child, they will give you so much money towards helping bring that child home. There's grants that are help with the expenses of sibling adoptions or special needs adoptions. There's not that many with private domestic infant adoptions, but they're there if you look for them. And
okay.
I looked on Pinterest, and that's where I found some very small grants, but they helped us. There are special adoption loans that are available, like Pathways for Little Feet and the ABBA Fund. They give you loans that they're different from a bank loan in that there's no interest fees ever with these loans. And then you tell them, it's called a covenant loan, and
mm-hmm.
you just tell them, I can afford X amount of dollars this month to pay back on my loan. So if you can only afford to pay $10 a month on your loan, that's what they'll set up for you. And if you're struggling,
oh, nice.
They work with you. Yeah, and it really helps adoptive families, and that's what their goal is. They're set up specifically to help adoption. And, of course, there is the adoption tax credit, which I know has been in the news lately. But
mm-hmm.
right currently, you will receive a tax credit of $13,570.
Oh, very good.
So it's a tax
okay.
credit. It's not a refund.
Mm-hmm.
It's a credit.
Yeah.
But it's applied to your taxes for up to 5 years after your adoption is finalized. So the problem there comes that you have to come up with your adoption fees ahead of time and then be reimbursed after the adoption takes place. But, you know, there are so many different ways. You can fundraise. You can, you know, work a part-time job. do whatever you need to do, because God will provide the funds. If he mm-hmm. wants you to bring this child home, he's going to make it happen.
Yeah, that's true. Katie, let's talk about some of the common myths about adoption that you have heard and some of the truths. What kinds of things have you heard that deter people from adoption?
The number one would be, I could never afford to adopt. Mm-hmm. I cringe when I hear people say that. Of course you can. You know, I already mentioned the grants and the loans, but, you know, people want to participate in adoption. I can't express the gratitude I have for strangers who donated to our adoption. You know, they found out we were having a yard sale, and they came and didn't buy anything, but they said, I just wanted to stop by and give you $100 for your adoption. You know, there are just so many ways. You can have car washes. You can have, you know, raffles, spaghetti suppers. You can partner with local restaurants and have part of the portions from the evening go to your adoption. You know, mm-hmm. and there are websites. I recommend 100goodwishes.com. We used them for our last adoption, and there were no hidden fees. They didn't take a percentage of money that was donated to us. It was just a really wonderful way, and strangers donated through that website because they came across our story. There's just so many different ways.
Wow.
Another common myth that I would say is that the money being used is basically buying the baby.
Mm-hmm.
And so I've had people say, I just can't get behind buying a baby. And I think that TV has made it appear that way, because that makes for a really good story.
Mm-hmm.
But really, the finances are not buying the baby. It's covering the expenses of the adoption itself. You know, part of the funds go to taking care of the medical needs of the birth mother and the baby, which would be a biological need anyway. You would take care of your biological child's medical needs. That's what you're doing here too. You're taking
mm-hmm.
care of food. You're taking care of, you know, making sure that the birth mother has a safe place to stay. And we just looked at it. Every time we were putting money towards the birth mother, that was us caring for our baby and taking care of our baby. And, you know, so it was easier to fund our adoption that way. And then there's the fees that go along with filing paperwork with the court for termination of parental rights, the attorney fees, the court costs. You know, these are all legitimate fees, and it's never, ever about buying a baby. So we just want to make sure that our baby is being taken care of. And if you can go into it with that mindset, it won't seem such a horrible thing to try to finance this adoption. And, you know, I also think, speaking of the birth mother and the birth father, I cannot emphasize enough that no one should ever, ever, ever speak poorly of them. I think that in our social media world, people are immediately jumping on this bandwagon of they should never be allowed to have children. What a horrible
mm-hmm.
monster they are. They're not. They deserve our love and our respect and our help.
Yes.
They're making a very, very difficult decision to see that this baby has a chance at life. There are other options that they could choose abortion if they wanted to, and they're not.
Mm-hmm.
And they're
mm-hmm.
and they could choose to even keep that child and try to raise that child in a difficult situation, and they don't. They say, no, I want better for my child. And, you know, every single situation is different and unique, but not all adoptions are horrible people doing horrible things. Sometimes
mm-hmm.
people come into difficult situations and they just can't take care of their children, even if they really want to.
Right.
And the last thing they need from us is condemnation or disrespect. And that's
why we
never speak ill of our children's birth mother. She's a part of our family, and we love her so much, and we just cherish her because she made a choice that was special for our family. And I would also say that, you know, other people should not come in and try to say negative things to the children. you know, these children don't ever need to be told negative things about their birth family. Not ever.
Mm-hmm.
They need to know that they were loved so much that they were given a better chance at life. And I think
that's a wonderful way to. That's a wonderful way to convey that message, Katie.
Yes, I feel very strongly that they need our respect. And I would say that another myth is that children shouldn't know that they are adopted until they are older. My husband and I believe that adoption is a blessing and not a curse. And we believe that it's important for our children to know their life story from the very beginning. And so we told it to them while we rocked our babies to sleep at night. I mean, obviously you want to keep it age appropriate. But
yes,
we want them to know they're special and they're unique and their story is amazing. Each one of my children, the way they came to us and the way that God formed our family is so amazing and so miraculous that we can't stop talking to them about it. They love their story.
Mm-hmm.
But every time I've heard of a family who has waited until their children are closer to their teens, it's blown up in their faces, and then the children don't know what to believe and whether they're really loved and why they belong in that family. Tell your children, because they need to know where they came from. They need to know their roots. It's okay.
Yes.
And,
yes.
You know, I think those are the most common myths that I would say about adoption.
Okay. Well, another thing I wondered, Katie, if you have encountered this, or once again, is this media hype. Have you ever had prospective adoptive parents say, well, I have an unwed mom here, but I don't know anything about the dad. What if he's a criminal? What if he's this? What if he's that? What if there's bad seed in this child? Have you ever encountered that or no?
Well, actually, we don't know the birth fathers of our kids.
Mm-hmm.
So we are living that. But I would say it doesn't matter. God formed these children. He
yes.
created them. I one of the things I had to give up was control when they were in the womb, and I couldn't control what their birth mother did or if she came to doctor's appointments or if she was eating the right food or taking prenatal vitamins. And, you know, so all of that stuff comes down to, are you going to trust God?
Yeah.
Because God knows who the birth father is, but what difference does that make?
Mm-hmm.
If their birth father is a criminal, that doesn't necessarily mean that they're going to turn into criminals. It doesn't necessarily mean that they're going to have some kind of serious illness. You got to trust God. Just like if you were having a biological child, you can't control if that child is born with severe disabilities.
Right.
It's the same thing. And if you think like that, this is my child that God has given to me for this time in my life and to raise them well, and then just trust them to God and let him lead them. And, you know, if you're going into an adoption thinking I can have control, you're going to be really disappointed, because there's no control in adoption. But
oh, there's
God
no control in raising biological kids either sometimes.
Right. Exactly.
I mean, you know, when it comes to physical disabilities and, behaviors
right.
and things. But, you know, when it comes to, I mean, you don't know if you're going to have a child and at the age of two, he or she is going to develop cancer or diabetes or
exactly.
whatever. I mean, we have no way of knowing that.
You don't. And even we as mothers, we have this false conception of controlling our pregnancies. We take prenatal vitamins, we eat all the healthy foods and the good fats, and we read all the good books. But a lot of times you still result in a pregnancy that something happens and you say, why? I did everything right. So even when we do everything what we think is right, sometimes things still don't work out according to our plan.
Yeah.
So just trust them to God, and God will work out all those details about what the child ends up being. And a child who grows up in a loving and stable home and a godly environment, they are going to have that as their root.
Mm-hmm.
Not some history of a birth father they've never known who's a criminal. They're going to know the love and stability of your home, and you are their parents.
Yeah, that's true. Okay, at this point, I think I'm going to take a little break here, which is really not that much of a break. We have listeners that come in and out of Blog Talk Radio sometimes in the middle of a show. So, excuse me, goodness. I just want listeners to be aware that this morning you are listening to Step Into the Light. My guest today is Katie Cruz Smith. Katie is an author. She is also an advocate for adoption and foster care. We have been discussing adoption, all of the wonderful things about adoption, about some of the, financial side of it and things that adoptive parents need to know going into the process. And we've talked about some of the emotional impact of adoption on a family, and we have much more to come. I do want to make listeners aware that if you would like to connect with Katie, she has a website, she has a Facebook page and a Twitter and an Instagram account, and you will find them on my website, which is Patty Sheen, PattiSheene.com. And when you go there, you will find a listing of all of the Blog Talk Radio shows, except this. Don't go there in the next few minutes because for some reason I couldn't get this one up there. I have to get with my webmaster and find out what went wrong, probably some stupid thing that I did. But anyway, I should have that information up by this afternoon or tomorrow at the very latest. If you came in the middle of the show and you'd like to listen to the entire show, or you'd like to listen to it again, or you'd like to refer someone else to the show, it is on archive, as are all of our shows, and you will find all of them listed on pattysheen.com under the Blog Talk Radio tab. So with that, we will get back to our interview with Katie. Katie, I had another question about adoption in general. Do you feel that, now you say your birth mother is kind of, you're aware of who she is, of
yes.
Your adoptive children. Okay.
Yes.
When there is a situation where the adoptive parents do not know who the I guess my question is, do you feel that adoptive kids should be encouraged to find their biological parent or parents if this is something that they want to do?
I think that that the adoptive parents should keep an open mind. I think every situation is different. Sometimes that's not a good idea, just depending on mm-hmm. what the situation is or what, you know, the biological mother may not be prepared herself to do that, to meet with the kids. Sometimes it's mm-hmm. harder for them to connect with them because it's just easier to not hurt as much if they just
right.
don't even think of them as their children. But then... Again, you know, there are times when it is a good situation, and it just gives the children, you know, a sense of who they are and answers some of their questions, there's never a jeopardy of them saying, well, which one's my real mom, which one's my real dad. They know,
mm-hmm.
they know that you are their real parents because you're the ones who love them and raise them. But
right.
sometimes there are questions in our minds about who we are. I think even biological children who grow up with both of their parents in the home, they question at some point, well, why am I here? Why do I exist? And
mm-hmm.
I think if you can answer those questions for your children, you will just help them feel more secure and more loved. So I definitely think each situation is unique, but I do encourage that keeping an open mind to that possibility.
Okay, very good. Well, and I think often, once again, maybe this is media hype, but I think often it's usually older kids, you know, once they become adults, they want to find
right.
their biological parent. But once again, that might be the whole media thing. I'm reading a book right now, in fact, for our
yeah.
book club, and this lady is looking for her biological mom because she, the main character, had a heart attack at like 42 years old.
Right.
And she wants to know what kind of a health history is there in my biological family. So
right.
anyway, I just thought
and
I would bring that question up because it does come up sometimes.
And that is a question that a lot of adopted children eventually have. I have a friend who was adopted and never knew her birth mom. And she had breast cancer and she didn't know whether or not she was she had the gene that would, you know, did she have to go through all of the surgery and the chemotherapy and all of that? And if she had known more about her medical history, then she could have saved herself thousands of dollars in having to have this extra work done. So there's something to be said about keeping those lines open. And maybe you can't let them meet their biological parents, but what about their grandparents or if they have biological siblings? You know, keep those doors open and listen to your children and assess it from your situation.
Yeah. Well, I had a cousin, too, who, goodness, I want to say she was well into her 30s or maybe older, Katie, and she just became absolutely obsessed with wanting to find her biological mother just because she wanted to know who she was. And, I mean, it was really, you know, quite an issue for her later on in her life.
Right.
Well, Katie, not only do you deal with adoption, but adoption and the foster care system often tend to go hand in hand, and you know quite a bit about the foster care program. So could you share with us some of the basic concepts of why we have the foster care program? What is its function in our society today? What does it do for young people? And once again, share with us some of the myths versus the truths of what the system really does.
Okay. The foster care system was originally designed to remove children from unsafe situations in an effort to give their parents the resources and training they needed to be able to parent them well, or to get back on their feet, or to, you know, if they are in the hospital, you know, give the children a safe place to go. The end goal of the foster care system has always been reunification, you know, get the children back together. It's not supposed to be foster to adopt, but that doesn't work out most of the time. The foster family takes in a child with the understanding that that child may be there for a couple of months, or they could have them for a couple of years, and then one day the court decides that the biological parents have done everything they need to do and the child is sent home. So when everyone involved works for the betterment of the child, then reunification is a definite possible outcome. And there are situations where it has worked out beautifully and everybody has done their job. But too often cases are drawn out and parents are unable or they're unwilling to change for the better. And it's the children who suffer, and they get tossed from one home to another, or eventually they become adoptable and they get to go to a forever family. But many people tell me that they would love to foster, but that they would get too attached. And as a foster mom, that is one of the worst things you can say to me, because of course we're getting attached. If you don't get attached to these kids, please don't foster them. You know, we've been foster parents since May. And since then, we do emergency and respite care mostly, and short term. And the shortest amount of time, we had two kids this summer for 24 hours, for less than 24 hours. And we love them. We are forever attached to them, and we knew them less than a day. You know, they were in my home, and they were my kids, and I was taking care of them just like a mother would. So we miss them terribly. And we've had 10 kids come and go from our home this summer.
Oh, my.
And people don't understand when you say to me, I don't want to do it because I'd get too attached. My heart breaks every time a child leaves me, and I cry for them and I pray for them because they're my kids forever and ever.
Mm-hmm.
And I tell people now I have 13 children. And
yes.
I don't, not all of them live with me, but, you know, they were in my home for a short time and they impacted my life.
Sure.
I would say that another common myth, I said this with adoption too, is that the parents don't deserve to have children. You know, sometimes you see it on social media. You see these very intense situations where the children, excuse me, the children were taken into custody. But children come into foster care for many different reasons. I mean, we've had situations where the children absolutely should not be sent back home. That they were in danger. They could, if they were sent back home, they would die.
Yes.
And we've advocated for them to be adopted out. But we've had some situations where it was just that the parents were going through rough times themselves and they needed a helping hand. You know, they were in poverty and they didn't have the resources available, or they didn't know about the resources available. And when those situations have come up, we've advocated strongly for them. And we've advocated that their children get to be returned home to them once they're back on their feet. And we've walked alongside those families and we've encouraged the parents and we've helped them find the resources they need to be good parents. Another common myth is that foster parents are in it for the money. And let me tell you, in our state, my fellow foster mom friend of mine and I were talking yesterday, and her husband figured out it basically comes down to a dollar an hour that we make for these kids. It's a little over $13 a day for a child. But $13 a day hardly covers food and board and the amount of time and gas you take them to therapies and school assessments and doctor's appointments and parental visits and caseworker visits. You don't, if you want extra cash, go get a job at the mall. Foster care is not about making money at all.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, there are movies where they make it, excuse me, they make it seem like that's what foster families are in it for. But I don't know a single foster family that could make an income off of foster care.
Their foster kids.
Oh, yes. It's amazing. You know, kids cost a lot of money. And you have to be for the children.
Mm-hmm.
You know, kids cost more than $13 a day, and any parent will tell you that that's true. You know,
yes.
And I think another myth is that you will just have to take whatever foster child they call you about. So you sign up for foster care, and you're at the mercy of DSS. But you're able to decide what goes on in your home.
Mm-hmm.
And if you want, you have the ability to say no. If you're not set up to take in a teenager because you have young children, then say no to taking in a teenager.
Yeah.
You know, if you have accepted a child into your home and there are situations occurring with that child that were not, you know, told to you beforehand, then you can say, this is not going to work out. You know, and
mm-hmm.
we've had to do that a couple of times where my children, you know, we're suffering because of the foster child in our home, and we've had to call and say, wow, this, we don't want to call you, but this is hurting our family.
Right,
you know,
right.
So you can control what happens. The Department of Social Services is not out to get the foster families. They are cherishing everybody who is willing to open their home to a child. So they're going to do whatever they can to keep you. And if you say this is too overwhelming, then they're gonna come in and help you and give you the resources you need.
Very good, Katie. Our time is running out really fast here, and I have several other questions for you. But I definitely, before we have to go, I definitely want to ask you about your book. Why Did You Choose Me? Tell us about that. Where the concept came from, and how you came about writing and illustrating this delightful little children's book that you did?
Okay, well, during our third adoption, you know, everybody told us we were crazy to adopt a third time. We had a girl, we had a boy. Why did we need to go through this again? So my husband and I, we tend to lead with our hearts, and then we let our brains catch up later. You know, I question whether everyone was right. You know, are we being foolish? But our heart said that there was still room at our table, and she was their sibling. My children are all half siblings, and we
mm-hmm.
wanted to keep them together. And so I told my husband that the only way that I would know for sure that this adoption was in God's will for us was to do it completely debt-free. I was not going to take out another loan because we were still paying off the loans from my son's adoption. I didn't,
mm-hmm.
I didn't want to, try to cut expenses or anything. I said, God is going to fund this adoption. So I began looking for every grant that I could find. Even if I thought it was a long shot, I applied for it. And one grant that I found was on Pinterest, and it was part of an essay contest. And the question posed was, if your child comes to you one day and asks, why did you choose me, what would you say? And after I won the grant, yay.
Wow, that is neat.
It was wonderful. And I started thinking about that question. And, you know, I decided to turn it into a poem that I intended to just put in my baby's memory book so that she would always know, you know, this is one of the ways God showed to me that you were part of our family. But one day I was working in the garden with my friend, Sarah Strickling Jones, who's my illustrator. And I was basically complaining about how few grants there were for private infant adoptions. And so she had the idea that she could illustrate the poem and we could sell it as a book to raise more support for my adoption. But we started working on it, and then we didn't know how to get it published without, you know, if you self-publish, you have to put a lot of money into it.
Yeah.
And so it got put on a shelf, and, you know, God provided all of the funds for our adoption in other ways, and it even provided enough that we paid off our son's adoption. So we were completely debt-free. And so I had one contact within a small publishing company, and so I sent her my book and hoped that she could help me. And when she became COO of the company, she presented the book to her boss, Sam Lowry of Ambassador International, and he agreed to meet with me and hear my story. And so thanks to Anna Rotz, we were soon signing a contract with our publisher and began turning into a story, the story into the book you can now purchase. And the questions in the book are all based on things my kids have asked me, you know, that, and they can even pick themselves out in the pages of the book. They know which ones they are in that, which questions are there.
Oh, how neat.
Yeah.
So not only does it minister to others, Katie, but it's a very personal thing for you and your family. That book will always be special to all of you. Oh, how neat is that? Wow, that's a delightful story. Thank you for sharing that with us.
Yes.
Well, of course, I've had some contacts with Anna. I've interviewed at least one of her other authors, and she's referred a couple of others to me as well. But so I did read Why Did You Choose Me? Because she sends me a copy, which is nice. She sends me a copy of the books to read.
Yeah.
But a couple of things I wanted to bring up without giving away too much is that in the book, you know, it's a very, very simply put together story. Of course, it's a children's book, but you bring out really important things like the child's behaviors, comparison to others, you know, things like that are very, very basic and yet very intense for a child. So I really enjoyed it, and I would definitely recommend it. And also, I took the liberty of, when I can get this stuff up on my website, of putting the buy link from Amazon on there.
Great. Yes, thank you.
For the book. So, yeah, I thought you'd want that on there. And I didn't know. If you have another buy link or any other information you want to send me, feel free in an email afterwards, and I'll get it up there. Okay?
Okay.
So, yeah, I definitely wanted to talk about the book and promote your book because it's just a very delightful little story and that would hold a lot of meaning for an adopted child. In fact, I have a friend here in town, went to a meeting the other day, and they're in the process of adopting a child. And I was telling her that she needed to listen to this show. And I said, and she has a book out. And what I was telling her, she says, well, good. Tell me where I can buy it. So,
great. Well, yes, it's great now here for Christmas. If you're trying to think of something, I just wanted to open that conversation. You know, young children, they have those questions, but they don't know how to start that conversation. Adoption is a heavy topic. So I wanted to find a way to start that conversation between the parent and child without making it too heavy, but still answering those heavy questions in a lighthearted way.
And that's exactly what you did. Yeah. I would say you accomplished that goal very well, Katie.
Well, thank you very much.
Well, as you know, the premise of this show is for people who have been in a dark place kind of share how they came back to light. And I'm sure in your adoption journey or maybe even in your writing journey, because there isn't a writer out there who hasn't had a dark day.
Yes.
would you share with us a dark time in your life and how you found your way back to light?
Okay. Well, I think one of the darkest times in my life was during our second adoption. You know, we weren't planning to adopt at that point. And we were just kind of looking into maybe doing it again down the road. And so our hearts weren't quite there yet. And we received a phone call. And it was our attorney calling to tell us that the birth mom of our daughter was pregnant again. And would we consider keeping the siblings together? And immediately our hearts were burdened for this baby. And we said, yes, absolutely. We want to keep the siblings together. And so we started, you know, we were coming from $0. We had nothing set aside for an adoption. And so we started pursuing the adoption process, and we'd get a little bit of money together, and we'd make the ends meet, and then we'd get a little bit more, but we were really struggling, and we didn't have any way to buy nursery furniture. We didn't have anything. And I just got to this point. It was on a weekday, and I just sat down. The only thing I had in the nursery was a rocking chair. That was it. And I sat down in the rocking chair, and I just was very upset because my husband said, I think we're going to have to say no. The money's not coming in. We can't even buy furniture. I think we're going to have to say no. And I was mad. I was angry with God. And I said, Lord, why would you tease me this way? Why would you torture me by making me fall in love with this baby boy that I haven't even met yet, that I didn't even ask you for? And you put him before me, and you presented him to me, and now you're ripping him away from me. Why would you hurt me like this? And I just sat there and I cried, and you know, I was basically having a tantrum. And God just quietly rebuked me, and he just brought to mind, I hadn't recently read the passage, but you know, it was a passage that I grew up with. It was Jeremiah 29:11. For I know the plans I have for you, declares the Lord, plans for welfare and not for evil, to give you a future and a hope. And it was then that I realized God doesn't bring things into our lives to be cruel to us. He has a purpose for every trial that we go through. And it may be that he needed to present this child to me so that I would pray for this child, that I would be an advocate for this child. But maybe this child wasn't meant to be in our home. Maybe this wasn't going to be a good situation for him to be in our home. And, you know, so I finally said, Lord, I'm sorry that I'm not trusting you. And I'm going to give this baby back to you. And you do with him whatever you want. And if I don't get to be his mom, then help me to accept that. Give me peace and just help me to see what your purpose is for this little boy's life and what it is in my life. And I just suddenly had this amazing peace that God was in control, that God had, God was going to take care of this little boy. And it was the very next day that my friend convinced me that I needed to go to a get-together with some of the ladies from church. And it was supposed to be just come and play games and stuff. And we were getting ready to leave on vacation, and I didn't want to go. I was emotionally exhausted. I was just done. But she made me go with her. She wouldn't leave me alone. And we got over there, and it turned out it was a huge surprise party for me from my church. My church family, wrapping their arms, and they provided all of the furniture that we needed. They provided all the diapers for months. There was boy clothing. There was baby items. And it was like God said, see, I just needed you to trust me because I've got this. I can provide all the needs. And then we left that weekend to go on vacation, and we were still praying about whether we needed to say no to the adoption or not. And we finally received word from the two loans we had had applied for that we were approved, and all the rest of the adoption was completely covered.
So everything just came together.
It just came together, but God needed me to let go of my control. I'm a control freak. And I want to control how this is going to go, and I'm very organized and check the boxes on the list. And God said, I don't work by your list. I don't have boxes to check off. I got a better plan, and you're going to have to trust me, and you're going to have to trust that this little boy to me, because I can take better care of him than you can. And it was then that I realized he's got this. He knows the perfect plan for me, and he doesn't plan evil for me. He plans a future and a hope.
just like the Abraham story of how far are you willing to go to be obedient to me?
Right. Exactly.
Wow, that's a neat story.
Thank you.
Katie, I wanted to ask you, what responsibility do you think the church should bear in the lives of adoptive and foster care families?
Well, I think that it's the church's responsibility. It's not the government's, to make sure the needs of the orphan are being met. And that extends to the adoptive and the foster families as well. You know, the church can support families by taking them meals. You know, whether you bring home an infant or you're bringing home a teenager, you're bringing home a new person into your home and your world is about to change.
Yeah.
Not having to worry about meals is a huge blessing. Offer free babysitting. Offer to take the biological children or the, you know, the other adopted children who've been there. Give them gift cards for family outings. You know, suddenly you go from a family of one with a child of one to having three kids. It suddenly becomes very hard to go out to eat or to go play putt-putt or go to the movies.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the gift of gift cards is a big deal for an adoptive and foster family. And provide basic needs. You know, we get calls in the middle of the night that they're bringing us a child. We need car seats. We need diapers. We need formula. We need clothing. You know, if you can provide those things, you know, instead of consigning everything or giving them away or throwing them away, give them to a foster family or an adoptive family. You know, donate funds to help offset the cost of adopting. You know, today is Giving Tuesday. Do you know of an adoption agency that you can give to, or a foster care group, or, you know, somebody in your area who's adopting? You know, give to them. The church can provide free training in order to provide the foster family. We're required in our state to have 28 hours of training every 2 years. And if the church steps up and provides those training, it gives us opportunities for training hours and provides free child care, that's a huge blessing. You know, and educate the church family on how to care for the children that are coming into the church, because the church should be ministering to them as well. You put them in children's church, in Sunday school, in nursery. What do you need to know as one of the caregivers during that hour? Give the family a break. Give them an hour to be in the service and listening to God's word. You know, don't keep calling them out of the service because you don't want to deal with this child. Find out what, educate yourself. What can you do? You know, and don't be opinionated or criticize how they're handling a child. What looks like, you know, we're being harsh or, you know, we should just be giving in to this child. That is not how we take care of children. And we know more than we can share.
And oh, yeah, you know more about the history and what's going on than, absolutely.
Right, and a lot of times people will try to hug or reassure the child, but that's not always a good thing. When you're trying to establish yourself as the authority, as the parent, these children are coming out of some serious situations, and they don't know who to hug or who's the boss. So if you need to ask the parents, what is an appropriate way for me to interact? Can I hug your child? And then understand if they say, please don't do that right now. We're still working on establishing that intimate relationship ourselves. You know, just come along, ask questions. We're foster parents and adoptive parents. We're not afraid to answer questions. You know, if you come to us and want to help us, we will answer your questions. You know, just come alongside and be there. We ache for support. We want to be supported and have others walk with us on this journey.
Absolutely. Well, those are wonderful suggestions, Katie. And I come from a very small town with a very small church, so, and mainly an older congregation.
Right.
So right here, my personal situation, although like I told you, I did meet a lady the other day who, she and her husband are adopting a child, so there you go.
Right.
You know, sometimes adoption is all around you and you don't even realize it. There was a family in our town who, oh my goodness, Katie, I can't tell you how many foster children went through that home over a period of probably 25 years. I mean, it was absolutely amazing. They were just well known. And also, my sister-in-law and brother-in-law, they had a foster child through the system that they ended up adopting. And she's,
oh, wow.
What, 17 years old now? Yeah.
Wow.
And I remember my sister-in-law telling me at the time, I must be crazy because when this kid is a teenager, I'm going to be in my 70s.
Wow.
But,
wow. What a blessing.
You know, yeah, exactly. Exactly. Yeah. And I think, you know, some families just have this amazing capacity to love, and they share that love with these children. And it's a wonderful, wonderful thing, just like you and your family do. Katie, is there anything else you would like to share with us before we close out the show?
No, I want everyone to know that you can have a hand in adoption and foster care. You know, I cannot emphasize that enough. Maybe you can't open your home right now, but I gave some ways that you can walk alongside us. And
definitely,
you know, and you say you come from an older congregation. You know what? We need grandparents. We need grandparents to step in and say, I want to adopt a grandchild. And
mm-hmm.
that kid, I'm going to pray for us. You know, remember us in your daily prayers, because it is hard. And we are dealing with things that we can't talk about. And our kids are dealing with things that they can't talk about. You know, so show us support. Don't criticize. But love us well and pray for us every day.
Most definitely. And thank you so much for sharing all that you did with us today, Katie. You shared some facts that we needed to know, but you also shared your heart. And that's what I love about interviewing my guests, is that when they open up and really, really share their own hearts and their own feelings. And you certainly did that today. So thank you so much. It's been a blessing to have you with us today.
I appreciate you giving me the opportunity.
Absolutely. And with that, I will say goodbye, and God bless you, and God bless your wonderful family. And may you continue to be an advocate for the orphans of the world.
Thank you very much.
All righty. Listeners, in closing, when you look back on the dark periods in your life, you may find they were not quite as dark as they seemed at the time. And when the light does shine again, it is so much brighter than you remembered. Don't forget to go to pattysheen.com. That's PattiSheene.com. And check out Katie's social media sites. I think you'll enjoy learning a little bit more about her. And thank you for spending some time with us today. Look forward to seeing you next week. God bless you.
There is a candle in every soul, some brightly burning, some dark and cold. There is a spirit who brings a fire, ignites a